Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 9 o'clock tonight, Jason Chan is in studio. Jason Chan, a great restaurateur here in Chicago. He did the great sushi place Juno. He also had the place Butter, which is in the West Loop a couple years back. He was working for Let Us Entertain You. He just left to go to L.A. to bring... He's working with an L.A. group to bring some L.A. restaurants to Chicago. That's going to be happening this fall and this winter. Jason Chan, great guy, great businessman here in Chicago. We'll talk with him about his newest venture coming up at 9 o'clock. And Kelsey Huff will be here at 10 o'clock to play the worst. This is, of course, where we complain about the worst things in society for prizes. That's what we do. It's a pretty simple concept, and you seem to like it because 312-981-7200. There are a lot of worse that get thrown out on a Tuesday night. So that's all coming up tonight on The Download. My guest tonight at the big table is a man who is a venture capitalist, a philanthropist, and an entrepreneur. J.B. Pritzker has been many things, from the campaign chair for Hillary Clinton in 2008 to the man who started the tech incubator 1871. He also runs the Pritzker Family Foundation, which, among other things, focuses on early childhood education. His firm, Pritzker Group Venture Capital, was founded as New World Ventures 20 years ago this year. He's part of a Pritzker family that has been a staple here in Chicago for decades. Tonight, we talk business, politics, and Chicago as we know it today. J.B. Pritzker, welcome to the big table. Nice to meet you.
Good to meet you. Thanks for having me, Justin.
So, so many things. I mean, I guess we start with 20 years. I mean, that was something that I kind of stumbled upon in the bio. But, I mean, you've been sort of funding projects and living in the world of venture capitalists for 20 years.
Yeah, it's been quite a journey, actually. Maybe that's just evidence of how old I am, the 20 years I've been in the business. But it's been terrific. Actually, when we started in venture capital here in Chicago, there really was so little to invest in here in Chicago. So being in Chicago, the advantage really was you could get on a plane and go elsewhere to invest companies. So if you think about 20 years ago, 1996, and the internet was just getting its footing. And so there were lots of great opportunities nationwide. But here in Chicago, again, you know, just not a lot of entrepreneurs there. You know, you could count on one hand the really great ones.
Was there a part of you that wanted to invest locally? Obviously you've done so much with Chicago, but at the time in 1996, were you like, there's not a lot here, I guess we'll just invest anywhere?
Well, you know, the funny part, I mean, of course, I'd rather walk down the street, you know, to the investment rather than get on a plane. But indeed, you know, it wasn't, you know, remember, it's a business. So you're looking for the best investment opportunities. If they happen to be, you know, where you are, great. You know, maybe you got to pick up and move to where they are. Back in 1996, lots of entrepreneurs, by the way, were getting up and leaving Chicago because they felt like they could only find venture capital or they could only find other entrepreneurs in other cities. So, you know, I didn't have a preference exactly for, you know, I got to invest in only Chicago companies. I wanted to find the best investments. The truth is, though, that the best entrepreneurs are grown here in Chicago because the hardest thing in the world is to build a company with nobody else's capital, right? And back then there was very little venture, and I couldn't cover the world. I could only do what I could do. In fact, we were very much smaller than we are now. So, you know, I was investing, I think in total in 1996 to 1998, I invested in six companies through that entire period. And with, you know, $500,000 investments, that's all I could really do. Mm. That's what I had to invest. And fortunately back then, you know, everything was going north. You know, it was fantastic. 1996, 7, 8, 9.
Until you hit the old 2000, right?
2000, you know, mid-2000, it all, you know, started going the wrong way. But 96, 7, 8, 9, you were a genius. It doesn't matter who you are, you know, right? Everybody was investing in NASDAQ stocks and everything was fantastic. And it all seemed like, you know, irrational exuberance, wonderful.
Being in that position where you were there in 1996 through 1999 and everyone was getting, there were so many great ideas and things, has that helped you or has that helped you evolve as a venture capitalist from that experience of watching it kind of all tumble in 2000? Are you a different investor because of that experience?
100%. I think I'd point to anybody in their life, you know, when you run into a rough patch, no matter what it is, if you can get out the other end of it, which is always hard. Yeah. You know, you're a better, different person for having had the experience, usually. And so in my case, you know, we were very lucky. I think, you know, venture capital, you know, there's a fine line between clever and stupid. You know, and
that's a tagline of the show, by the way.
And, you know, and the real, that line gets cut basically on, you know, did you happen to hit the cycle right or wrong with your investing?
What I find interesting is, you know, even early on, even at the beginning of that answer, the first answer was this concept of, you know, you go wherever the idea is at. But in this case, you've almost brought the ideas here by building 1871, the tech sector, and really doubling down with the mayor, Daley and Emanuel, to say, listen, we want a tech community here. We want this to be an industry. Why do that? Why try to build that to bring people here as opposed to going to wherever the investment's at?
Well, and let me be clear that back in, although in the 90s it was hard to find great companies to invest in here, the truth is that this ecosystem evolved. You know, with or without me, it was going to evolve. And it evolved. There were many more entrepreneurs starting companies. By the way, the best entrepreneurs often are the ones that start them in the roughest patches of the economy. Hmm. So you often find that the guy, you know, the men or women who start companies in 2001 or 2009, you know, are the, and they're, you know, they're just trying to power through the hard times, or the ones who went, it was started up high, let's say in 2008 or back in 2000, you know, and thinking everything's going to be easy. And then they managed to fight their way through. Those are the best entrepreneurs. And so here in Chicago, again, a dearth of capital. And the entrepreneurs that managed to build something out of those tough times are actually some of the best entrepreneurs here in Chicago today. Now, once you've got a cadre of those great entrepreneurs, it's like an infection, a good one. I mean, you know, other entrepreneurs learn from them. The serial entrepreneurs are the best teachers in town. So, you know, if you can invest in that kind of ecosystem as it's improving, it's a great environment today. Chicago has, and there was just a pitch book study that was done of Chicago, that you're most likely of any ecosystem in the country, including Silicon Valley, you're more likely to get a 10x return or better in a Chicago investment than you are anywhere else.
Does that blow your mind as somebody who's here in 1996 and you've put a lot of your money and invested a lot in this sort of infrastructure for a tech sector, to be able to hear that, to have that pitch book come out? Is that crazy thing?
Well, certainly if you took a snapshot in 1996 and then looked at today, it would look crazy. You know, you'd say someone painted the picture of today. It couldn't possibly be. But if you lived through it, as I have, and I've seen so many people engage in building this ecosystem, you know, you can't help but see that, you know, Chicago did this itself. It really was it's a homegrown endeavor. 1871 didn't draw everybody from around. You know, what really it was a conglomeration of all that already existed in Chicago, but you just couldn't see it, and it wasn't centralized, and the entrepreneurs weren't working together because there was no place to go. Most entrepreneurs, you know, you were either building it in your own apartment, you were building it at the Starbucks because had free Wi-Fi, or you were building it because you rented sublet space between, like, you know, an insurance broker and a dentist.
And I would say from your side, I mean, from the other side, from the venture capitalist side, getting to those people, getting those ideas in front of you in something that you're actually going to invest in, that must have been difficult. The idea of bringing it all together under one sector or one industry seems to be beneficial for venture capitalists as well.
It isn't why we did 1871, but it's absolutely true that if you're a venture capitalist that doesn't know Chicago, for example, the best way to plug in is to come here and go to 1871 to start. There are lots of other great places to go, the way, around the city to meet the great entrepreneurs. But 1871 now has 425 companies in it. And so if you're a out-of-town VC and you're looking for, you know, where can I go to start my journey in Chicago, it's 1871.
J.B. Pritzker is my guest tonight at the Big Table. We're talking to him about business, about the tech sector, politics. We got to talk politics. And just Chicago. I mean, I want to get into what you think of the town. You've been here, your family's been here, and you've contributed a ton to this place. We'll continue our conversation. We'll take a quick break. J.B. Pritzker at the Big Table. Stay with us. It's a download here on WGN Radio. My guest at the big table tonight, J.B. Pritzker, longtime philanthropist, venture capitalist, entrepreneur here in town. He also runs the Pritzker Family Foundation, which focuses on a lot of things, including early childhood education. And we also have to talk politics because you were once a campaign chair for Hillary Clinton in 2008. Lots to talk about with J.B. Pritzker in studio. But let's stay on the business side, on the venture capitalist stuff. I'm interested how you mentioned right before the break, 1871's got 400 plus companies in it. Not to mention we're obviously focusing on this, but there's a lot of other tech incubators. I mean, there's thousands of companies that are starting up. How do you invest? What does it take to get J.B. Pritzker to buy into a startup?
Well, maybe not totally different than other venture capitalists, but I would say absolutely. You know, you've heard the expression about retail that, you know, the most important three things in retail are location, location, location. Yeah. Well, in venture capital, if you ask me, it's the people. It's, you know, it's all about the founders, the quality of the team. They're the most important thing, particularly in the youngest companies, because, you know, a strong wind could blow these companies away for, you know, they don't have a huge balance sheet or anything like that. The product is often still in development or just in beta, being tested by some, you know, by some customer. But it's the people that really matter. You get to know whether a company potentially has longevity first, by virtue of the quality of the people that are starting the company. Then, of course, you got to look at, you know, the size of the market, right? And the opportunity to go grab that market share. How many competitors are there in the market? How far behind or ahead are you of the competitors?
Are you in a position as someone who is a part of the Pritzker Group Venture Capital to kind of be like, you know, these numbers are bland, but I like this kid. I'm going to give him some money. I mean, has that ever happened? Like, I always think about, you know, what we know of venture capitalists and pitch for tech companies, and it's Hollywood. But I mean, is it a numbers game, or do you have the sort of override to be like, you know what? I like this kid. His numbers suck, but he's my guy.
That's so funny. it sounds like the way actors get found in movies,
right,
you know.
Right.
You know, the answer is that it's, as I say, it's a combination of things that make you want to invest in somebody. But it is also true that you sometimes sit in a pitch meeting and you really are impressed with the quality, let's say, of the senior engineer, the CTO of a company, you know, who may have founded the company, by the way, and he was smart enough to bring a CEO. Really, you know, love the CTO, but don't love the product or the service that they're introducing,
right.
Or don't love the team that they've brought on to the company. But you say, boy, I want to follow that guy, you know, because that guy is really good. So often what that means is, you know, if you didn't like the product, you don't like the market and so on, you're not investing in that.
But
what you often don't want to whisper in the guy's ear, like, listen, if you'll dump this company, you know, go start another one.
I'm going to wait till after the meeting's over on that one. Right?
Yeah, maybe. But the truth is that we really, listen, since the people are so important, we often pay attention to and follow where those people go over time.
Interesting.
Because remember that the best, really the number one kind of entrepreneur that you're looking for is a serial entrepreneur, somebody who's done it before, who's both made mistakes and had success,
and is going to do it again.
And they know the difference, you
right,
know,
right.
between, you know, what are the stumbling blocks you want to avoid so you don't do that again. And so we track the people very importantly. And when they're on their second and third opportunity, and sometimes the first one, by the way, we don't avoid first-time entrepreneurs, but when they're on their second and third and you can kind of see the track record along the way, you say, boy, I'm in with that guy.
Yeah, it's so interesting, too, because it just flashed in my eyes. It's kind of like politics in the way you've been with Hillary Clinton for a long time. You've been part of her campaign and you've watched her grow and change as a candidate over the years. It's similar in the concept of giving money to campaigns, that you're almost is using the same sort of technique as you would for investing in a company.
Well, certainly in politics, you're judging the people. You know, if you're going to choose a candidate to support, whether you're going to vote for them or give them money or get involved with their campaign, right? I mean, you want to try to pick well. It isn't always true that you pick well, by the way, because how much can you really get to know people? It's
right,
the same,
right.
Frankly, how much time can I spend with an entrepreneur myself to really get to know how good they are? And the answer is, There's no way you could spend, it's like hiring. There's no way you could spend enough time interviewing somebody and have that be the sole basis upon which you would invest with them. On the other hand, when you're hiring and when you're choosing an entrepreneur, talking to the people who know them best, right? Their references, so to speak, their off-reference references,
right, you know, right.
Calling the people they don't know you're going to call and saying, you know, what's this person really like? What's she, you know, how does she operate in under stress? You know, and when the company, I've had the worst circumstances, I have to tell you, where we invested with somebody and a stressful circumstance came up, you know, whether it's the economic stresses or just the company isn't quite going well. And I've had CEOs flip out.
Like chicken with the head cut off.
Kind of my thing. God. You know, and they become somebody completely different. I once had a guy we invested in who was very devout, religious person, and they carried around a Bible with them everywhere he went, which was, you know, whatever your choice is, that's great. I don't do that, but you know, I actually thought that was like kind of a good thing, you know, somebody's carrying a Bible around. But there came a moment when, you know, things got pretty stressful, and then you really find out who people are, you know, under serious stress, and it turned out not well, and the, you know, person kind of, you know, flipped out, and it didn't work out very well. I only give that as an example just to say that you know, the judgment can sometimes be wrong because you only have so much to judge them by in that moment.
Well, I'll talk. Well, I after the news, I want to talk about politics and Hillary Clinton and your relationship.
I know you were trying to get me.
No. I'm actually flipping it back to tech because I want to wrap this up. Just, you know, we've had tech people in here. Howard's been in here. Who else? Brad Keywell was in. And we kind of get at this notion of risk and failure. Failure to many people is a negative word. Failure in your business, in the tech sector, in venture capitalists, it just comes with the territory. It's actually maybe more of a virtue.
It's a mark of experience. It's you know, if you've ever seen, this was true in politics for Abraham Lincoln, if you've ever seen that sign that, you know, that lists all the things that he failed at before he became president of the United States, you know, there's a lot of experience that goes with failure. And I'm not suggesting you want to find an entrepreneur that's failed, you know, multiple times and then invest in him. But I am suggesting that failure in someone's background doesn't indicate necessarily that they themselves are failures. It what it does indicate is a measure of experience. You have to still judge, can the person still build a great company? But you'll find that, you know, even Brad Keywell has had tough times. He's also had, you know, amazing success. But the great entrepreneurs have been through that cycle.
And the great venture capitalists as well?
Well, I believe so. You know, if you haven't gone through the rough times in venture capital, then you don't really know anything. You know, like I said, you didn't need to be a genius to be successful in 1999 or 98, 99, but you did need to be pretty good to get out of 2001 and 2.
It's interesting because, you know, there's obviously it's a lot about the entrepreneur and who you invest in. But, you know, for all of the failures that will happen and the risk associated, the risk most of the time is going to fall on the venture capitalist, the person who puts the money in.
Well, you know, it depends on what you're risking. You know, I mean, the sweat equity is not, you know, meaningless. So the entrepreneur is putting 24/7, presumably, into the endeavor. So, yeah, they're losing a lot, too. And by the way, they often have a lot of their own money in it.
Right.
So they're losing money, too. But venture capitalists certainly often have the bulk of the money that's invested in a venture. And so when it fails, a venture capital, you know, firm or a venture capitalist is the biggest money loser anyway in that failure.
JB Pritzker, my guest in studio. Okay, we're done talking venture capitalism, okay? I appreciate you indulging me getting...
It's fun.
It is. It's interesting. It's fascinating world of investing and the risk and the reward. JB Pritzker, my guest tonight. We'll take a break. We'll get an update on tonight's news. We'll come back, and I do want to talk politics. You were the campaign chair for Hillary Clinton in 2008, kind of a rock and a hard place being in Chicago with Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. You had a big hand in that, so we'll talk with JB Pritzker about politics coming up after the break. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's Download here on WGN 720 WGN. JB Pritzker, my guest at the big table tonight, a philanthropist, venture capitalist, former campaign chair for Hillary Clinton in 2008, which is an interesting story. And I want to pick up our conversation. We've talked the first half about business in the tech sector here. And the second half, I want to talk politics. You know, you've been a supporter of the Clintons for a long time. And, you know, you ran their chair, or your chair of their campaign in 2008. What is it about Hillary Clinton that keeps you in politics, that keeps you coming back to that campaign, keeps you being a part of it?
Well, the first thing is she's amazingly competent. I mean, when you think about hiring somebody for a job, you know, there's nobody that's run for president in the last, I don't know, in my lifetime, really, that I can think of, that has a resume and experience and capability right. and competence to be president like Hillary Clinton. There really has, you know, when I think about all the features that you're looking for somebody who's got the you know, who's got the toughness to be president. It's very difficult. The job is, you know, is 24/7. And it's also a job that, you know, where you really have to stand up to a lot of people. So she's got that capability. You've got to have compassion. And she's deeply compassionate. In fact, one of the reasons that I support her is she's so much engaged in early childhood development, early childhood
education.
And has been doing that, by the way. You know, she graduated from law school. And what was her first job? The Children's Defense Fund. When she became the First Lady of Arkansas, what was the big program that she helped implement? It was a program called the HIPPE program, which was an early childhood education program. This is something that's sort of deeply ingrained in her history, something and demonstrates a kind of compassion, understanding, et cetera. Plus, I don't think there's anybody that's listening or anybody that's ever heard her speak that doesn't think, you know, she's the smartest person on the stage.
Well, I mean, it's funny because the first half we were talking about what it takes for you to invest in a startup. So is it the same concept? I mean, is it the same process and the same thought sort of rubrics around picking a candidate that you're going to support and picking a startup?
A little bit. I mean, I really do think there are features of that. You know, you talk about, you know, candidates are something that I think you start out with. You know, do we have a compatible view of the world? I don't have to have a compatible view with an entrepreneur. In fact, if we have a compatible view, that might be a detriment to that entrepreneur. You know, they need to be thinking differently, right, than most other people.
Okay.
A candidate is somebody, at least for me, I need to know that we match up on a variety of issues. And then I need to know, and these are where the features of an entrepreneur come in that you like to look for in a candidate, you know, do they have leadership capability? Are they creative? Can they really get done what they say they
want? How do they deal with stress, right?
How do they deal with stress, exactly. Right. Is this somebody that you could rely upon and trust to go actually implement the things and make valiant attempt to implement the things that you want them to go do in the world? So, yeah, I think there are similar characteristics, but it's the same characteristics in some ways that you look for when you're hiring somebody. You know, you want somebody who's highly competent at that job. You want somebody who really knows what they're doing.
For you, you know, being a venture capitalist and being a guy with money, I mean, do they audition to you? I mean, they come and interview, they sit down as Hillary Clinton that it's whenever you met years and decades ago and said, all right, JB, here's what I can bring to the country.
Well, I guess a little bit. I don't know. You know, I mean, makes me sound like I have more power than I do. but the reality is that, you know,
JB will see you now.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Right. And then dance, you know. No, the reality is that I want to clear something up. I met Hillary Clinton, you know, really had my first conversation with her 10 years ago. So it isn't like I've known her for 30 years.
Okay.
And I really didn't know President Clinton either. I mean, I've been involved in politics for a long time in a variety of ways. I know you had Dave Lundy on your show yesterday. And he was one of the founders, co-founders of DL21C, Democratic Leadership for the 21st Century, with me here in Chicago. And we supported Bill Clinton because, you know, it was 1992 and that was the election. But my connection with the Clintons is really with Hillary Clinton. It's because 10 years ago, I met her. I got to spend time with her. I was unbelievable. I mean, she is unbelievably bright. And I've met a lot of senators. She was a senator at the time. And I thought, wow, that may be the smartest senator I've ever met. And by the way, hugely knowledgeable across a wide variety of issues. Thoughtful. I mean, really knew the detail. You know, she could tell you the difference between the tribal views of two different Sunni tribes in the Middle East. I mean, she really understands issues to their core. So I'm very impressed with her. And did I interview her? No. I mean, in a way, though, you know, when you're meeting somebody who's, you know, who with that much experience and so on, when you're meeting someone you're thinking about supporting, you're kind of thinking in your head, I'm interviewing them, you know, I really want to know if I agree with them on these issues. New candidates, though, are very much like a venture capitalist.
So they're coming, they're saying, okay, we need to get in front of J.B. Pritzker.
People who've never done it before, you know, you know, never been a candidate before, that's one where you're really taking a bet. You don't know. Hillary Clinton, you know what her views are you know, on a multitude
of issues. Get involved with a lot of new candidates? I mean, is that something that you find yourself supporting?
I try to because I think, you know, first we need to get more, you know, particularly younger people involved in politics. We need new people to choose to run for office. You know, we're not going to get new blood if people are just completely turned off by it and don't think there's anybody out there that'll ever support them. And so I try to, you know, find great new candidate people that I think are, you know, worthy. And that goes down to the state rep level and to aldermen and so on. And by the way, sometimes, you know, you're wrong. I mean, you know, you kind of you support somebody, not wrong, but, you know, you support somebody. By the way, if they lose, that doesn't make you wrong.
Right.
That's not the wrong.
You're saying people who win and
people who win or lose and they turn out not to be great people, you know, and you don't know, you know, you do your best to try to ferret it out. You listen to people around them and you know, say, oh, well, that guy's friends with them or this woman knows them really well. And, you know, you try to make a judgment call about them. But again, you know, you only have so much information about me. There have been a few people who've been friends of mine who've run for public office. Dan Katowski was a state senator here. He's retired now.
He comes on Patty's show,
He's fantastic. Yeah. I mean, this is a guy I knew for years before he ran for states. And when he decided to run for state senate, I said, I'm all in. You know, what can I do? And he was a terrific state senator. And actually, evidence of that is he got out. I mean, really.
You're seeing that a lot these days. I mean, a lot of different on both sides of the aisle.
I don't want to encourage people to leave. I'm just saying evidence of, you know, this is a guy who served a term, you know, several terms, did really great work, and then he's choosing to go on and do something great in another field.
Let me ask you a question about that, because a lot of times you hear, whether it be Democrats or Republicans, and we see this in state legislators, they're having the budget problem down in Springfield. They will say, I'm getting out of this business because there's just too much money involved. I can't keep up, this, that, and the other, right? For you to be a person who supports candidates and you know, has money to throw around in you know, different elections, what do you say to that? What do you say to politicians who say, you know what, the system is bought and sold and I don't want to be a part of it anymore?
It's hard. I mean, there isn't a great retort to that. I think the reality, you know, my father-in-law ran for United States Senate many years ago. My wife is from South Dakota. He was a chief of staff for a former governor, and they recruited him. It was almost like they couldn't find a Democrat to run against the popular incumbent Republican senator. And he, frankly, a very high-quality guy, but not very well-known. And they recruited him, and he ran, and he almost won, which is really amazing. But frankly, not totally surprising because he's such a great guy. When he was done running for United States Senate and having lost by only a few percent, they did a poll that showed he would win if he ran for governor 2 years later, right, against all the potential candidates. Yeah. And I said, oh, my God, this is great. You know, you're the perfect guy. You're honest. You're straightforward. You know, this is you're the perfect guy. Let's go. You know, how can I help? And he said, I don't want to run for governor. Why not? Isn't it your dream job? Yeah, it's my dream job. I loved being the chief of staff for a governor. I think being governor is a very important job. Why not? Hate raising money. You got to go pander to all these groups, right? I mean, you don't agree with 100% of what Sierra Club says they're for. You know, you only agree with 75%. And, you know, they trash you and they won't give you money and they think you're horrible. And similarly, on the other side of it, you know, maybe some business industrial group, you know, if you don't agree with them on 100%, then they're going to trash you. You know, and so you have to go pander to them and tell them only the things that they want to hear. And that was his view. You know, his view was, I just don't want to be that person. So it's very hard. Politics, money, and it's why I try not to be that. You know, it's like I am an individual who supports candidates who I think really will go to Springfield or go to Washington and do what they really believe in. And by the way, their views are compatible with mine. And that's why I support.
You're kind of, I mean, it's interesting, like the progressive movement of politics here in this town, whether the sort of Bernie Sanders faction, they'll point to the Pritzkers and you know, the family. family and you saying, you know, this is the problem with the, you know, Illinois politics, you know, so much money.
They've got it completely backward. They really do. Now, I think money in politics, that general topic, that is a problem. I mean, because why? Because most of the money comes from, you know, organized lobbyists. Right. But individuals most often are as passionate as I am about a candidate or about, you know, I want to only support pro-choice candidates. Right. I mean, just as an example.
Right. And that's your right.
And so, you know, do you begrudge me support, you know, writing a check to support somebody who's pro? If you're pro-choice, if you're anti-choice, maybe you do begrudge me. But I don't begrudge somebody else doing the same for an anti-choice candidate. I'm just saying, and I'm picking that issue, early childhood development. That is hugely important to me. And I want candidates to get elected who understand that issue and are going to do something important in that subject area.
Let's take a break and we'll talk about that. I want to talk about that area. Essentially, you're talking about preschool. You're talking about, you know,
more than preschool, because there's a lot going on.
Great.
0 to 3.
That's what I want to talk about. We'll come back. We'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about Chicago. Wrap it up. Why you stay here, what this town means to you, and also where we're at, where we are as a city. J.B. Pritzker, my guest tonight at the Big Table here on 720 WGN. Stay with us. Welcome back to Download. My guest tonight at the Big Table, J.B. Pritzker, talking Chicago, politics, business, tech sector. Right before, and I want to talk about early childhood development as well and education. But, I mean, what I want to talk about is in 2008, you put your support behind Hillary Clinton in this town that was, you know, full 100% behind then-Senator Barack Obama. What was that like for you? I mean, I've read the stories just about you held firm. You know, that was something that you did, and you were the campaign chair for Hillary Clinton. But so many of your peers and politicians in town, the Dailies and the Durbins, they all flipped. Everyone was on the Obama train. What was it like to be on the other side?
Well, I had lots of friends on the other side, because if you didn't, it meant you didn't have any friends. You know, it wasn't 100% for Barack Obama. Let me be clear. You know, Hillary got, I think, 33% when the vote kind of came in here. But it was, it's tough. All the political powers that be were for Senator Obama at the time. And you know, that doesn't, you know, that didn't deter me. You know, my view is if you're for a candidate, you're with them and, you know, through thick and thin. Mm-hmm. But it was tough. You know, you had to put on the flak jacket and the helmet, you know, and go out there and kind of declare yourself, I'm not for who most of you are for.
Did you, I mean, I read that you kind of had to bridge the two, you know, the idea of Clinton and Obama kind of coming together. That was part of your role as the campaign ended.
Yeah, at the end, I think, you know, by the way, you remember that campaign went on a long time.
It really did, right?
You know, and so it wasn't, you know, nobody was giving up, because there was still hope, you know. And although President Obama was ahead by a little bit for the entire, you know, last half of the race, let's say, it was only a little bit. And she kept winning primaries.
It was very similar to what just happened, right?
Caucuses, right. Yes, it was. And although that one was even closer. And so, you know, I don't begrudge, there are so many Bernie Sanders supporters who feel, you know, who felt at the end like, you know, it got stolen, it wasn't right, you know.
I remember that.
Yeah, I remember feeling, you know, not it was stolen, but I remember that feeling, you know, right. That feeling like, the candidate that I thought was best for the job didn't get it, and I can't believe it. It's almost, you know, you just can't understand why somebody – at the time, it was like, why would you pick somebody who's spent 2 years in the United States Senate, you know, to be president when you've got somebody who's got all this experience?
I'm interested in the parallels to 2016 because, you know, we saw Mayor Emanuel, who you supported, be sort of cast out at the convention. You know, he was the kind of guy that was like, you don't see him on stage. It seems even when Hillary came through town, he wasn't with. I mean, does there have to be a J.B. Pritzker intervention to get the two of them together? What do you think of Mayor Emanuel and the relationship with Hillary Clinton?
Well, they've actually known each other a long time, and he worked in the White House under President Clinton. And you know, I know that they have a relationship still. It's not like, you know, that's gone away in any way, but it's also true that, you know, that, you know, Mayor Emanuel has had, you know, challenges here in Chicago that he's still dealing with. And I think, you know, partly I'm sure that he doesn't want to bring any of that to the Clinton campaign. And remember, Hillary doesn't spend a ton of time here in Chicago you know, this doesn't appear to be a swing state. If it becomes a swing state, I think we've got a real problem in the campaign. But you know, but she does get to come through, by the way, going to Iowa and going to other swing states. So we do get to see her here.
When you have a candidate like Mayor Emanuel, who you supported, he became the mayor, reelected. You know, and he goes through hard times like he is now, where his popularity is waning, his approval ratings are down. You know, as someone who supported his campaigns, do you have to reevaluate? Do you have to say, okay, you know what, he may be up for reelection in 2019, we'll see. But as somebody who has been a big supporter of Mayor Emanuel, do you reevaluate when he faces these challenges and is sort of having trouble in the public?
Well, I mean, I reevaluate's not the right word. I mean, let's start with this. I am certain that mistakes were made on a number of fronts, not just by the mayor, by the way, but, you know, by leaders in the police department and so on. And so, you know, it's hard to discern exactly who, you know, who's made the biggest mistakes and how much is the scorn deserved. I honestly think that the interactions that I've had with the mayor, he has really been an advocate. I mean, I'll tell you what his number one thing is that he's been all about for his entire 2 tenures or whatever, 1.5 tenures now, you know, has been jobs. I mean, I swear to God, every time I see him, he is asking me, can you move jobs into Chicago? You know, are there any companies that you're involved with where you can get them to move to Chicago? What can you do to help? What can I do? He says, what can he do, Mayor Emanuel, to help the companies that are here in Chicago in the tech sector and others to build jobs? I mean, I've never heard anybody say, bring jobs.
You see it. I mean, he's taken jobs from, you know, we see the McDonald's headquarters coming down here, other big ticket
items. And so,
items,
you know, you have to credit him with a lot of the recovery that's gone on. And think about, you know, here we sit in the WGN studios and you see all these people walking around. It's, you know, it's almost 9 o'clock at night. And the downtown, think about how this has been revitalized. And people want to live right here. They want to live all the way in the loop.
Maybe in the Trip Tower.
Yeah. maybe so.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, maybe that's a good transition to an issue in Chicago that a lot of people will talk about, and that's the widening gap between the haves and the have-nots.
Right.
And, you know, anyone who's listening will say, okay, well, that's great that there's a revitalization here on Michigan Avenue, but some of the neighborhoods we see
indeed
a lot of problems. But early childhood education, that's really at the root of what you're talking about. You're talking about from babies when they're born to 5 years old and the kind of education that they're getting. Right now you're seeing more haves being able to say, I'm going to go to daycares are popping up like banks used to pop up in Chicago and well-to-do neighborhoods. You look at the West Loop, it feels like there's a private daycare that's popping up like crazy. But the have-nots, what are their options? The public options are not there. What do they do? What can be done about making sure that kids
we've got to recognize that, I mean, the issue that, you know, people call income inequality is an issue. Is hugely important. We need to focus on it. It's real. And I don't just mean that people at the top have a lot and people at the bottom don't have much. It isn't about punishing people who've made money that somehow they're out to punish people that don't have money. That's not what it's about. What it is about is opportunity, right? I mean, making sure that can very young children get the kinds of services that they need? Can those families, those very low income families, find them, right? Because young parents and parents of all sorts, right, with very young children are desperately in need of help. They both need help with their own incomes and with subsidies, and they need help for their children. And so we don't do enough, and we've got to fix the tax system. There's no doubt about it that the wealthy need to pay more in taxes. That's just going to happen.
We need to raise minimum wage.
I mean, these are all issues that need to be addressed. And here in Chicago, we've got the added burden, and it's not just Chicago, of too many guns on the street. And too many people are getting killed. And part of that, look back to the Supreme Court and their rulings on gun control. Because now what do you see when you walk into buildings? Those signs that say, don't bring a gun in here. Well, is that going to stop anybody if they're a criminal? Yeah. So that's not going to do anything. That does not. Gun control laws need to be brought back. We need a Supreme Court that brings it. Anyway, early childhood, the reason that I focus on early childhood is I think that's the best way to address income inequality. that, in my view, at-risk, low-income children are best, you know, helped from birth, not from 5 years old or 6 years old in kindergarten, but start at birth and help the parents become better parents to learn that. I mean, many, and 99% of parents want to be good parents.
I think you're onto something. We had Sherry Runner from the Urban League in here last week, and we talked about the weird kind of way that first it's middle school, then it's high school, you fall behind, and then, you know, you go into the different businesses and they don't want to take someone who went out of college. College won't. So what options do you have?
And
as
if
a
you
young
start
African-American,
kindergarten,
right?
Not ready to learn, which is, by the way, literally 25% of kids who show up in kindergarten today across the country are not ready to learn. I mean, they're not ready for kindergarten. And most of those are low-income kids.
I think that plays a huge role. And it plays out in CPS as well, because the kids that invested, or the parents that had the money to invest from 1 year old on any training, they're getting into selective enrollment. They're on a path already where kids where parents just don't have the money, they don't start that process till it's free education when they're 5, 6 years old.
And kids who get early childhood development resource and early childhood education are, you know, 50% more likely to graduate from high school, 70% less likely to commit a violent crime in their lives, right? I mean, we can save so much in the later years in terms of social services. So I'm just thinking fiscally for a second, because apparently nobody wants to spend money on this, right? And so if you ask me, we should have an early childhood tax specifically focused on, we should have the wealthy pay an excise, an add-on tax that would go directly into early childhood development and early childhood education.
J.B. Pritzker is my guest tonight. We'll get to Rob in the news in just a second. My last question for you, Chicago, why do you stay? Why does the Pritzker family stay? I mean, you've mentioned at the top, you can go anywhere to invest in companies. What is it about Chicago that keeps J.B. Pritzker here?
God, I love this city. And I'll tell you one thing. You know, there is no city, and I've lived in a number of cities. I went to college out east. I lived in the West Coast. I've lived in a number of places. There's no city that has more decent, more honorable, honest people than Chicago. Now, it's by some increment. I'm not saying everybody on the street that you meet is that way. But honestly, the number of people that you get to know in Chicago, once you've lived here a long time, right, you really get to see, and then you go spend some time elsewhere. You get to see, there's something in the Midwestern roots. There's something in Chicago roots that makes this a better town for people. So, I kid my brother who lives in Los Angeles that I love everything about Los Angeles except the people. And I don't really mean that, of course. But what I really do mean is that Chicago, you can diss the weather. There are other things you may not like about Chicago. But the people, I mean, bedrock, great, honest, great people. I've never been in a town or lived in a town that was more genuine than Chicago.
J.B. Pritzker, my guest tonight at the Big Table, venture capitalist, philanthropist, entrepreneur, runs the Pritzker Family Foundation. This was fun. Thanks for coming in and spending the hour with us at the Big Table. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.